Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. This is your Wiretaps podcast for Monday, January 27th, 2020. Alex Brown, welcome back. How are you doing this week?
Very good. Thank you, Graham. Looking forward to another episode.
Good. Yeah, I'm energized. I got to be honest. I've had a couple of weeks in the U.S. At the Clear Admit office, and I made it down to Washington, D.C., was over at GMAC talking to their CEO, and visited Georgetown, caught up with the admissions team at Wharton in Philadelphia. And as you know, we had our Clear Admit annual retreat. So I'm pumped. I'm excited. It's been a good week and I've been enjoying my time here.
That's awesome. I went to Helston once.
Where's that? Is that near you?
That's my local town.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. But it's... Yeah, but you get these beautiful walks along the cliffs every morning. So, you know, there are benefits. So we're pretty much through round two deadlines for the MBA application season. And I would argue that we're kind of into full on interview mode, or in some cases, like interview panic mode, as people are waiting. And, you know, Livewire's really gotten heated up of late with Ross, Berkeley, UT Austin, Georgetown, Tepper, Emory, they're all kind of issuing invites I've seen coming across the wires. And, you know, a couple other items, I guess maybe you can talk about this, but what's the structure for Ross's process? Because they've had two waves of interviews. And then I also thought you might want to comment on MIT's round two deadline, which there was a little bit of a glitch around this week.
Yeah, sure. Last week for MIT, it seems like they had a technology issue with their application system, which is probably not great for their branding at Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Oh, now we're going to get a phone call from them.
Yeah. Well, I hope not. Obviously, Rod Garcia is a good friend of mine. So, these things happen when we rely so heavily on tech these days. So they extended their deadline to the end of the week to facilitate whatever that issue was. And like I've said previously, I'm not a big believer in the equity of these extended deadlines, especially if those that, you know, got their application in under the deadline weren't offered an extension for any updates and stuff like that. But anyway, it is what it is. It's happened now to three schools, I think, in this round two series or where we are. And as we speak, or at least as this is being published Monday, it should all be behind us. Round two deadlines are done for the top schools. Michigan Ross is one of the early schools to sort of release those interview invites for the entire round, which is very good. They did it in two waves. They're then going to release some folks. I forget what date that is, in the next week or two, and then leave some folks hanging until the final decisions for round two without actually having an interview. So, you know, these folks, I guess, have the potential of getting a waitlist decision without interview, which, again, is sort of a more recent phenomenon over the last two or three years in MBA admissions, I think. The idea that schools actually waitlist candidates before they interview them, because I'm not quite sure that that's really a good thing. It's quite rare to come off the waitlist, then get an interview, and then get admitted. It's not completely unusual. Well, it is quite unusual, but I know it happens. I remember a case last season, I think it was out of Stern, where someone was waitlist without an interview, eventually got an interview and got admitted. So it does happen, but, it's a tough spot to be in because you're kind of behind all the folks that got invited for an interview during the interview invite period, right? So if they don't invite you for an interview, you assume you're behind that group. So it is tough for those folks. But anyway, Ross is out the gate with its interview invites, and we've got, you know, a few schools, not so much this week, but the following weeks, you know, Harvard and Wharton and various other schools will release them in blocks. I think this week we've got Duke actually doing it at the end of this week. So good luck to everybody. I mean, we're really getting into that part of the season where, you know, prepping for interviews, doing interviews, analyzing their interview performance or whatever it might be.
Yeah, agreed. And yeah, you're absolutely correct. So next week is Harvard. I think it's February 4th is the date that they're going to be issuing, you know, invitations to interview. And so, yeah, lots to come. A couple of other housekeeping items. So IMD has a deadline on February 1st, and that's their round one. So top school in Europe, you know, but that's for a January start. So they're one of these kind of outliers that has a different deadline. And the other thing is, you just want to remind people of that M7 Livewire Insights report that's been flying off the shelves of our virtual store. It's free, so that probably explains it, but it's got really good information on average GPAs, GMATs, GREs, and the timing of interview invites at all those M7 schools. A couple other things. So Ross announced that they now have a STEM track in their MBA program. Yet another school, you know, it's come on board with that. Georgetown announced they have a certificate in sustainable business, which is nice to see. And I learned just recently that we're going to be hosting a Dartmouth Tuck chat on February 11th. So mark your calendars. That's going to be a webinar on the ClearAdmit website. And I think it's going to be with some current students from Tuck. So that'll be a good opportunity for people to ask questions. Beyond that, our podcast sponsor is the evening and weekend program at the Kellogg School of Management. And, you know, you can reach your highest goals while earning an MBA part-time. The evening and weekend MBA program at the Kellogg School of Management is conveniently located at their downtown Chicago campus, offers flexible study options to fit your lifestyle and match your experience. And by graduation, you share the same toolkit, skills, and network as the school's most prominent alumni. So visit kellogg.northwestern.edu/EW. And once again, we thank Kellogg for their sponsorship. And it is an interesting thing. You know, these part-time programs tend to do quite well in a hot economy. And I presume that's because people who have these great jobs are saying, you know, there's a high opportunity cost to leaving a full-time job when they're doing really well. And so part-time programs can make a lot of sense for certain individuals. So Alex, you have picked out three wire entries. And I've decided to kind of turn things a little bit upside down this week. So we're going to start with a decision wire entry, a candidate who's fortunate to have a lot of offers, but maybe feels unfortunate that they have a tough decision to make. And then we'll look at a couple of prospective, apply wire candidates who are, you know, put in their stats and everything, are wondering what their chances are. So anything else, Alex, before we dive in?
No, let's go ahead.
All right. So this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So this candidate is, as I said, a decision wire entry. And, you know, this person was admitted to Columbia, to Duke with $140,000, to Michigan with $70,000, and to UVA Darden with $140,000. And, you know, they applied to that group of schools plus MIT and Stanford, but did not make the cut at those two. They're going to be starting school next fall, obviously, and they want to work, they say, in technology. GMAT score 720. Location, they just say international. And in the notes, they mention they're keen on breaking into the U.S. venture capital industry as an international. And they say they love Columbia's location advantage, but they're unsure how much of an impact that might have. And they frankly point out that the scholarship dollars have made this a tough call. And, you know, as I said, I mean, basically they have no dollars from Columbia, at least that's what they reported here, and they have $140,000 from Duke and Darden each, and they have $70,000 from Ross. So there was a lot of dialogue on the site, not just with you and this candidate, but, you know, there were some other folks on the site who chimed in. What do you make of this? I mean, this is an interesting dilemma. I have a lot of thoughts, but I kind of want to hear your take here first.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you got a lot of thoughts, Graham, because I can turn it right back to you. But I just a few things at the top. They want to break into venture capital, whether directly out of business school or as a result of either consulting or tech coming out of business school. So that's quite tough for any candidate to do, domestic or internationally. And, you know, my first thought to accomplish this is you have to go to the best school that makes you an offer in terms of the school with the most resources, brand, networks and stuff, because that stuff's quite important for breaking into VC. So my immediate thought was Columbia seems like the wiser choice. And I would also presume, and this maybe you can talk more to, Graham, as you're perhaps a bit more familiar, but going to Colombia, being in New York City, to me would seem like an advantage, whether it's in semester internship opportunities or whatever it might be. That would be an advantage. So that's sort of, on the one hand, Colombia seems like the right choice, but the amount of money that Duke and Darden are offering this candidate does make you second guess that choice, I guess. And, you know, I push the candidate a little bit, say, well, what's plan B and what's plan C in terms of if you don't get into venture capital? And maybe I misread what plan A was from the get-go anyway, because whilst they want to break into the US venture capital industry, they're quite prepared to wait and take a position maybe in tech or consulting to then try to break into venture capital. So the question then becomes, which of these three best enables them to potentially go into tech, product management, corporate finance, product management, that's what they were looking at, or consulting and then into venture capital? And that might give a little bit more credence to the choice of Darden or Duke. It seems like they've passed on Ross, which is another great program, because of the money offers from Duke and Darden. Anyway, I'll turn it back to you, Graham.
Okay, so I think the first thing that jumped out at me is, like, I would like to know, where is this person from and what is his or her work experience? Because, you know, if you think about the goal, the overarching goal is to stay, it sounds like stay in the US in terms of working in VC. You and I know that that's a tough field to break into, but so I'm just imagining a scenario like, you know, what happens if they have to go back, you know, and what if the place they're going back to is a lower income, you know, environment? And so then suddenly the money may be more important. With that said, I think that, you know, when you think about venture capital, you often think about, well, what are the common paths into VC? And I would say there are kind of three paths that I hear about. You know, there's kind of people who've done banking, you know, there's kind of star investment banker, maybe they move into private equity or VC. That's not a crazy move to make. You also hear about some people who are really successful entrepreneurs. So they, you know, start a company, sell it, and then suddenly find themselves with a VC role because they want to invest in other companies. So that's possible. And then the last way that sometimes people do it, I think, is they go to one of the very best consulting firms, usually McKinsey or Bain or, you know, BCG, and they're able to pivot because of the prestige of those firms into VC. That's probably not the easiest route, but it happens. So I guess the reason I'm pointing this out is because it's important to me to understand, like, where's this person coming from in terms of their work experience too? Because if the VC firms see their resume and they've just been, you know, doing something that has no, you know, they haven't been in banking, they haven't been at a top consulting firm, and they're not a successful entrepreneur, that's going to make it even a more difficult leap, regardless of which school they're at. So I started to focus heavily on what is their plan B and C. And as you said, plan B, they said doing corporate finance for a tech company, and plan C was consulting. And I just thought, you know, frankly, if they want to work for a Fortune 500, you know, or a tech company, or do consulting, obviously, you know, Duke and Darden can place them in those roles. And at 140K, not to mention cost of living stuff, New York versus these more kind of rural locations, you really start to scratch your head, because especially, again, person's international, they might have to go back if they can't stay in the US. I should also mention that I think it's Duke has a, don't they have a STEM OPT track within their MBA that would allow this person to stay for up to 3 years in the States without having to get a, you know, visa? So there's a lot at play here. And I think it's not an obvious decision. And I think you also correctly pointed out that these programs are really different. So I think the environment at Darden and Duke is one type of experience. You know, it's a close-knit, campus-based kind of community in a relatively rural setting when you compare these places to like New York City. And Columbia is a bit of, it's more hustle and bustle. And so I don't know that the location, I would encourage this person to think about, where do they want to be? Where are they going to be happiest for those 2 years? And to maybe start really thinking hard about, you know, I might have to do one of these plan B or C jobs first. And if that's the case, and keeping in mind they may have to go back to their home country, suddenly the money starts to loom large for me. That's my point of view. And also, I hate to say it, but, you know, CBS is M7, right? And these other schools are not. They're, you know, whatever the next tier would be called. But it's not as though CBS is the number one school in the M7, right? They're probably, you know, most people would place them probably more middle to back of that group, right? They're not, you know, people tend to choose Harvard or Stanford over them. So it's complicated. It's not a slam dunk type case. So that's my view.
No, I completely agree. And I think, again, it's one of the reasons why I chose this particular decision wire entry. It's not clear cut. There are lots of nuances to address. I think wherever the person ends up, they're going to have a fantastic experience. But I would imagine as an international student, it's a little bit harder to get the essence of the differences in the cultures of the schools, the environment, and so forth. But I think, you know, when you said Columbia is the hustle and bustle, I think that's exactly right. I mean, you know, some of those students at Columbia will already have their New York networks in place, so they'll be less engaged. So that takes away a little bit of that sort of community spirit. But the flip side of that is if it's an advantage for this person to do, let's say, an in semester internship and that, you know, do that kind of stuff. There's few schools that allow for that, and Columbia is one of them because of their base in New York City. So not an easy answer. I did want to highlight a new feature that we have on the wires to help people, you know, making their final decisions. They can actually do a search on Decision Wire for Columbia and Duke, or Columbia and Darden, or Duke and Darden, and see others that have faced similar choices and look at the conversation and see how that panned out. Now, when people do that, they have to recognize that each candidate's decisions and choices is based on their personal goals, their professional goals, and so forth. So for one candidate, you know, the answer might be very clear-cut. For another candidate, it's not clear-cut because they have different goals and they have a different background. But I think that this new feature that we have, Graham, on Decision Wire can help people really understand some of the harder decisions that candidates have had to make that are similar to the decisions they're now making.
Yes. And it's basically, it used to be set up so that you couldn't do a kind of search where you could search for people who got into multiple schools. You know, you'd get anyone who got into any of the schools that you ticked the box for. And now you can search in a way that only shows you people who got into both A and B, which is really useful. So great feature that was added. I know last week we talked about adding the likes feature and the likes earned. And I'm sure you're going to tell us at some point that you're probably over 100 likes earned or something. But, you know, I'm not keeping score. I'm way behind you, it seems. So
I am now over 100.
Oh, I knew it. Okay. Okay. So Wiretap's candidate number two. This is an Apply Wire entry. The person is going to be applying to start in 2021. So they have a little bit of time before they submit. And they actually indicated that they don't know where they're applying to. I don't think I've seen an entry like this before where someone didn't put any school. So they're really leaving it up to, you know, our audience and you and I to kind of give them some advice. They have worked in kind of entrepreneurship and tech prior, but in the kind of energy and renewable energy sector. And they're looking to use the MBA to get into either a tech, banking, or VC, or maybe even entrepreneurial role. So lots of options there. They have an 86th percentile as their GPA, and they mentioned that actually placed them in the top five of their class. This person is a Hispanic electrical engineer from the Dominican Republic, and they're looking to end up in the US or the UK. They've worked for about 4+ years, and they're currently in Budapest, but as the comments point out, they've kind of moved from different, you know, they had like maybe a part-time or internship type thing in upstate New York. Then they went to China for a year or so. Hungary, where they're kind of the CTO in a small kind of startup. And I think they're now moving to Hong Kong. So there's kind of a whole path that they've taken that was a little confusing to me at times. But we did have some dialogue on the ApplyWire forum. And so I just was curious, what do you make of this candidate? Because they don't have a test score yet. That's another piece that's missing. And they have this sort of complicated background. But what do you think of this person?
Yeah, actually, quite honestly, when we first developed ApplyWire, it was My original thinking was it would be for this type of candidate that has selected undecided that we can help them really develop their application strategy. So that's why I was actually really excited to see this post, because as you've pointed out, we rarely do get candidates this early in the process in terms of their development and thinking. We do get other candidates that are looking at a year ahead, which is great, and hopefully we'll get some more of those over the next weeks and months. But to have someone that's really sort of undecided in terms of school selection, targeting strategy and so forth is I think quite refreshing and interesting. Excuse me. So what I will say about this candidate is, yes, it was a little bit confusing to understand, I believe, his story. Excuse me if I've gotten that wrong. But I think that's important for the candidate to note, because when they do ultimately end up applying, their story needs to be well developed, needs to be cogent, needs to make sense very easily to the ADCOM. That being said, this is a real international globe-trotting kind of person, right? So from the Dominican Republic, grew up in Mexico, has worked for 2 years in China and 2 years in Budapest, Hungary, and is now off to or currently in Hong Kong.
Yeah, a nomad.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're going to see more and more of these types of candidates in the future, right? Whether they're called digital nomads or whatever they are, they're working in virtual environments. This person is a CTO of a small tech firm currently based in Budapest, relocating to Hong Kong to take another role at another firm whilst remaining as CTO in this sort of more virtual organization, bouncing back and forth, juggling too. We'll see more and more of these types of candidates, I think, just the way, business is sort of being transformed by digital, right? So I think that's really super interesting. So I think from a professional experience standpoint, as long as the candidate can really show impact during their two-year period in China, their two-year period in Budapest, they've actually done some interesting stuff. They've worked on real startups that have done good stuff rather than, continually flaming out, hopping from one situation to the next to see if anything sticks, right? So that could be the other reason why they've done this. But as long as there's some impact there and there's some real plan now in terms of getting the MBA to get them to that next level of what it is they want to do from an entrepreneurship standpoint or whatever it is, they've clearly got to think a little bit stronger and harder about their goals. But that's not surprising that they've got to do that, given that they don't even know yet which schools to target and they haven't taken the test scores. So one of the other aspects that showed me how early the candidate is in the process was the looking at the taking the GMAT and the GRE, prepping for both and seeing which one comes out highest. I just thought, really, you should just double down on one or the other and go that route, right? So just being a little bit smarter about the application process. I reckon that this person will end up with a very solid GRE score. They're engineering. They've done some really interesting things. So at the end of the day, Graham, I know I'm getting a bit long-winded about it, but I really hope they put everything together and really knuckle down and blow this test out of the water, because this is an element of the application they really do control. So really pushing for that high test score, and if they're not perfectly satisfied with it, going back one more time with some additional prep. And then let's look at what schools that they should be targeting. I would suggest, if the work has impact, which I truly hope it has, and they get their story together, I'd be surprised if they're not M7 material.
Yeah, I agree. Just like sort of briefly, I would say the goals are really fuzzy at this point, which is normal, right? It's kind of early stage for this candidate. So I think buckling down on the GMAT or GRE, it sounds like they're going to do the GRE, which is fine. Getting a really good score, as you say, will open doors for them. And yeah, I would just like them to work on thinking through What do they want to do? I mean, they mentioned some things, you know, VC and incubators and, you know, but I think they need to get down to like, sort of like, okay, what's the role that I want and where will it be? So I want to be an investor in a VC fund focused on the energy sector, or I want to be, you know, a CTO or, you know, whatever it is. Like, they just need to kind of come up with a concrete plan. And then, as you say, the schools should fall naturally out of that and out of the score they get to some extent. But yeah, I like this person. Very interesting, nomadic, you know, kind of thing. So very cool.
And maybe a little bit of advice in terms of selecting one of these paths coming out of business school. Maybe tech product management would be a good first step in a large tech firm, US based, you know, your Amazon's, Google's, Tesla, or whatever it might be, to get. I mean, clearly, if you go. This, it looks like this person's worked a very small entrepreneurial environment. So there is value, I think, in getting that experience in the large firm, seeing how they do things, getting a product management role for something with a big budget and so on and so forth. So if he was looking at guidance for advice in terms of what should that first short-term goal be, that might well be a good starting point that would work well with the types of entrepreneurial experience the candidate has had to date. But they want to hang it also on an ambitious long-term goal. So in 10, 15 years' time with the MBA, where do they see themselves? What do they want to see themselves doing? And how does that short-term position, the MBA, the short-term goal, set them on the pathway to that ambitious long-term goal?
Right. And you actually bring up a good point for all of our listeners who are thinking about business school. I mean, I think it's important to have a set of career goals that are both kind of feasible. So when you waltz in without the right background and you say, I'm going to be a venture capitalist, or I'm going to start a company, and you have no kind of background in that space at all, that would be potentially deemed as not really feasible. And they also need to be really well defined. So clear and feasible goals. And actually, I hate to do it, but I'm going to make a plug for the book that you actually wrote, Alex. I mean, I gave you an assist, but you really wrote it, called Becoming a Clear Admit, The Definitive Guide to MBA Admissions. You can actually download this on our site. I would recommend that, you know, anyone in this candidate's shoes who has time and is going to be applying, you know, down the road, read this book. It's a fast read. And it really does tell you kind of everything you need to know about how to get into a top MBA program. So there you have it. Should we move on to our final ApplyWire entry here?
Yes, you forgot to mention the book is free too, right? I think we put a coupon out there about 3 months ago, yes. And it's still there.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think if you register on the website, you can get it for free. Yeah, that's right. So there you go. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this candidate is applying to Columbia, Dartmouth, MIT Sloan, and Kellogg. And they're hoping to start next fall, which means they've just submitted their apps in round 2. They've been working in consulting, and they're hoping to work in consulting after business school. The companies they indicate interest in are BCG and McKinsey. GMAT score 680, GPA 3.65, and they've currently been working for 4.5 years. They're in Boston, and I think it sounds like they want to stay in that area, but I don't know. It's unclear because there's something going on where their post-MBA location actually says consulting, so I don't know how that happened. In any event, they mentioned in their notes that they attended a top 10 liberal arts college, like Williams or Amherst, and that they were the captain of a sports team. They spent 4 years in Big Four consulting and recently moved into a senior associate role at MBB, so one of McKinsey, Bain, BCG. They know that their GMAT is low. They took it once in December because they wanted to apply in round 2 as opposed to waiting for round 3. They've had leadership positions on cases, and they've started a couple of charity organizations. So Alex, what do you think about this candidate? It's an interesting case here.
I just wonder, you know, come November, December, did they suddenly decide they wanted to apply to business school this year? Because if that's not the case, why did they wait till December to take the GMAT? And I'm imagining they didn't have a lot of time to prepare for the GMAT. This person is a, you know, senior associate consultant at, you know, one of the top 3 strategy consulting firms. So that's a great role to be in. They got a strong GPA from a very good school. you know, they've set up a couple of charities. They everything else other than the GMAT says that this person's going to get into a very top school, I think. But I just wondered, like, what happened? Did they have a change of plan? And I guess the other thing that makes me sort of question this is, you know, they spent 4 years at a big four consulting firm. They've just, it seems like they've recently started at an MBB, yet they're going to business school.
Probably in June.
Yeah,
that's the thing that really jumped out at me. So I wondered, like, what made you pick this person out? And at first I thought, oh, this person, they have a, you know, I made the kind of quote mistake of applying to business school with a low test score, and I went to a liberal arts college, so I feel for this person. And so I wondered, is it, you know, is it how important is the GPA versus the GMAT? Because they have a really, you know, 3.65 while captaining a sports team at a very top, you know, liberal arts college in America. So that's terrific. But yeah, the first thing that jumped out at me is, why leave after only a single year at MBB? And I get that they already have 4 years, and so then they're going to have five, and they're, you know, they're getting older, and they probably want to just go and get the MBA. But I don't know, it makes me think of when I, this is going back a ways, but when I interviewed at HBS, when I was an applicant, I had been promoted, you know, months prior to that interview. And I remember, I was feeling riding high, you know, I got my HBS interview, and the interviewer, I just remember them saying, oh, so, you know, tell me a little bit about how you got this role. And I was talking about all the accomplishments I'd, you know, done, and all the things I'd done to kind of land this new promotion. And then they're like, so how's it going? And I'm saying, you know, doing well, whatever, you know. And then they kind of just, they dropped the bomb of, you know, so if it's, you've only been there a handful of months in this new role, why would you leave to go to business school? And, you know, so, oh, I think I'm ready, you know. And they said, well, then I guess this new job isn't that challenging, you know, if you're already ready. So I was kind of, you know, so I thought immediately of that, you know, is this person, do they risk kind of, so my initial view on this candidate is, you know, they might be better off, and we'll see what happens, but they might be better off applying in round one next year. And the other thing is, I couldn't help but wonder if their school selection, which is, you know, Tuck, Sloan, Kellogg, and Columbia, was somehow dictated by the fact that their score was a little lower. Like, maybe they thought, oh, I'm not going to put Harvard, Stanford, or Wharton on the list because I fell a little short on the test, but they're still aiming very high. But so I was just like wondering what would happen if this person spent the time, took the test, got like a 750, which they're probably totally capable of if they're a really bright, you know, McKinsey type person. I mean, that would open all kinds of doors and maybe even some scholarship money at some schools. So, so I don't know, we'll see. This is the year though, where, you know, they may get into one of these programs. They might even get some money based on what I'm seeing in terms of candidates getting more offers than usual and more money, because it's, you know, we're still in this downward trend with app volume. But that's my take. I was sort of a little trying to figure out, like, what's going on? Why are they applying now, and why so late in the game?
Yeah. I think that we can both agree on the fact they may well be successful this season. But if they were to take the time and come back next season in round one with an appropriate test score relative to all their other qualities, they would have you know, shot at a little higher profile. These schools they have listed are very good schools, and they can get them back to MBB. And I'm sure coming from MBB is helpful in that regard. But, you know, if they were prepared to wait it out, get some more of that McKinsey experience under their belt, come back with a stronger, more appropriate GMAT, I think, like you say, Harvard, Stanford, Wharton would be among their target programs at that point.
Yeah. And again, we'll just see. I guess one thing I should mention is that for one reason or another, the top MBA programs do seem to like liberal arts college grads. So in fact, I would argue that they prefer them sometimes to like business undergrads, as long as those liberal arts grads have done, like this person has, you know, taken on kind of business roles post-MBA and demonstrated some aptitude there. So yeah, this person, you know, we'll see what happens. Obviously, I hope they get into a couple of schools and can make the choice. But if they don't, take the test again, apply in round one, I'm sure they'll have plenty of options. And yeah, and they might be better for that with a little more experience. I'm kind of wondering maybe even if their firm would sponsor, because we do see that happening with MBB as well. So we will see. But best of luck to them. I will say, I think it was the first ApplyWire candidate that we reviewed, they actually asked to be featured. So I didn't mention that, but they were kind of saying, oh, it'd be great for you to talk about my profile on the podcast. So I would just say to anyone who posts that and we end up covering, you know, we'll do us the favor and maybe write a review, because I don't think I saw any reviews come in the last week. And I know we had one last week that we discussed, but so we're always looking for reviews and ratings on the podcast.
Did we have any listeners last week, Graham? Maybe that was the problem.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I think I did see some people tuning in. Yes, the stats.
Yeah, good. Are,
but in any event, yeah. So thanks for picking these out. As always, you know, next week when we air this next episode, it's going to be a big week with the Harvard decisions coming, you know, sort of shortly after we do the podcast. I think it'll be literally the next day. So lots to look forward to. And we appreciate everyone's contributions on the site. And, you know, definitely throw some likes my way so I can try to, you know, make an attempt to catch to catch Alex. But no, thanks everyone for listening. Alex, thank you. And yeah, we'll see you next week.
Very good. Good luck, everybody.